This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. In our last episode, Douglas struggled with Lou Watkins on the back lawn. Suddenly, Frank emerged from the shadows and sprang into the fray. Lou was caught off guard, and in one efficient manoeuvre, Frank quickly killed him, leaving Ruby transfixed with shock.
"What's going on over there?" Vi called. "Frank? Mr. Woods? Ruby? Are you there?"
Frank took one step away from the dead man before his legs gave way, and he fell to his knees on the grass, his breath heaving.
"Got him! I did it!"
He lifted his face heavenward with his arms raised in victory, laughing, coughing, shouting,
"I did it!"
Ruby reached him as he rolled back, grey-faced, shaking, and clutching his chest in a fit of laughter.
"Douglas!"
Ruby cried. What was he doing just standing there?
"Frank!"
Vi's voice again.
"Frank, is that you?"
The willow bat clonked onto the path as Douglas broke out of his stupor. He pushed Ruby away and dropped to his knees at Frank's side.
"Oh, Jesus! Frank! Oh, Frank, what have you done?"
Frank rolled sideways, racked with a roar of delirious guffaws. The ugly pathos of the sound ripped into Ruby's core. Transfixed by the scene playing out in front of her, the damp grass under her knees and palms was the only real thing she felt. Everything else, the world itself, had tipped sideways and shattered.
"Frank? Mr. Woods?"
Vi's holler scattered the splinters asunder.
"It's all right, Vi," Frank yelled. "We're rehearsing."
His shout became a staccato scream.
"A play. We're doing Andronicus. Andronicus."
"Frank, shush. Keep still, love." Douglas tried lifting the quaking shoulders.
"I'll help you."
Ruby leaned towards Douglas and put a hand on his shoulder.
"Come on, we've got to get him in the house."
Douglas made no move.
"Oh, God!"
Frank found his breath, arched his back and bellowed.
"Oh, Dougie! That felt so good, Dougie!"
He spluttered, his eyes glistening black jewels, as he curled into Douglas's arms, half laughing, half groaning, panting, his rambling words filling the night.
"Frank,"
Douglas bowed over him.
"I've been wanting to kill somebody for years."
Frank grasped a fistful of Douglas's jersey.
"You've no idea how much I wanted to do it, Dougie. I wanted to feel that I had that hand of death. They deserved it, Dougie, didn't they? The fucking bastards."
"They did, darling. They deserved it. You remember that sniper that time, Dougie, don't you? How it was?"
"I remember." I'm calling the police right now!
Panic sharpened Vi's shriek.
Vi!
Ruby's throat closed over the word. Her eyes were on Frank. Frank spread his hand over his chest.
Thought he'd have a go. Didn't count on me, though, did he?
His laughter spluttered to a cough.
I got him, didn't I? In the end, I did for him good and proper.
Yes, love, you did.
Douglas held Frank's head, smoothing the black hair, staring into the light dull in his lover's eyes.
Shh, shh. Please, dear, don't speak.
Even in the dim yellow porch light, Frank's face was the colour of potash. Ruby knew what it meant. Douglas stopped kissing his lover's face to cast a baleful glance at Ruby. A look that said, "You've done this." Frank reached for him again, pulling him to whisper in his ear. Whatever Douglas was nodding to, Ruby couldn't hear it. She was an outsider. She wished she believed in God. It hadn't done her any good before. God wouldn't listen to her now. Frank's fingers clawed at his beloved.
Dougie.
For God's sake, Ruby, Douglas screamed. Get Bradshaw.
There was no point ringing the doctor. She knew it, and her legs would not hold her up. She couldn't even crawl. Frank gave a rattling groan. His back arched again in a spasm.
Keep still, Frank. You'll be all right, Douglas was saying. You'll be all right.
It's too late.
Did she say it aloud? Frank's mouth stretched across his teeth. Rictus or smile, Ruby couldn't tell. Then his expression softened and his body sagged. The rumble of his guts was the last sound he made.
Frank!
Douglas kept rocking him.
You're not going, Frank!
Ruby's knees trembled.
Stop it, Douglas, she said, putting a hand on his shoulder. Leave him. He's gone.
She would have reached forward to close the unseeing eyes, but Douglas raised an arm to fend her off. His pullover had been slashed. A slow seep of blood began colouring the shirt underneath.
Damn it, Ruby! Do something! He bawled.
You're hurt, Douglas. Bleeding.
A bolt went through her and she leapt to her feet. Douglas touched the wounded place and glanced at his hand.
Go!
She was almost at the porch as his voice reached her.
For God's sake! The doctor!
The back door had been left open. There, framed in the doorway, eyes round and dark, stood Edie. Ruby swept her up.
I already rang Dr. Bradshaw, said Edie,
her voice small and distant.
I found the number. He said he'd come at once.
Douglas's wail was a sky-lifting keen. Vi shrieked.
The police are coming, Frank!
Edie's weight pinned Ruby's back against the hard edge of the sink bench. Her arms clung to Ruby's neck, and legs clamped were around her torso. There'd been no time to put her back to bed before the police and Dr. Bradshaw arrived, and Vi had bustled over. It was all she could do to push Edie into the old childhood dressing gown of Frank's that still smelled faintly of mothballs. She should have given it a second wash. Across the kitchen, the acne-scarred constable had his pencil poised over his notebook. The voices of Senior Constable McCaffrey and Dr. Bradshaw in the dining room were indistinct. Douglas was in there with them. What was he saying?
Mrs. Woods, the young policeman said. I have to ask you whether you, saw anything.
You have to tell them everything, Mrs. Woods.
Vi crossed the ends of her shawl over her dressing gown. If Ruby's tongue wasn't stuck to the roof of her mouth, she'd have told Vi where to go. She leaned forward to lower Edie to the floor.
Shall I take her? Said Vi.
No. Ruby managed to push her daughter onto a chair. Edie clutched at her again.
Mrs. Woods,
the constable persisted. Ruby swallowed the panic-driven bile in her throat and launched into a slender fiction. She'd been sewing. Frank and her husband had been playing cards. Douglas thought he heard a noise. He went out to see what it was. Frank followed him. She had carried on sewing. At this point, she put a hand on Edie's bony shoulder, a signal for her to keep her mouth shut. Edie slumped. When Ruby bent to look at her, Edie stared blankly at the floor through a curtain of hair. She was like a watch that had stopped ticking. The constable coughed politely.
I heard the rubbish tin.
Ruby straightened to face him.
Must have been knocked over. I thought something was wrong.
He jotted in his notebook. What version of the events was Douglas telling them in the next room?
You went out?
The constable prompted. Her next words staggered over the horror of the tableau.
Douglas was trying to help Frank. He'd fallen over. I couldn't tell.
Here she put her hand over Edie's ear and drew her close, breathing in the mothball scent of the boy's dressing gown as she pressed Edie against her.
And there was someone, a man, lying on the path.
Almost imperceptibly, Edie shuddered. Ruby squatted and stroked the straggling hair off her face. Behind the darkened eyes, something like an ember inside her daughter seemed to have been doused. Ruby had an impulse to grab her, shake her, pull her back into herself. Shout, scream at the others to get out. The power to do anything had left her.
I heard a dreadful ruction, and I rang the police station, said Vi.
What came next, Mrs. Woods?
The constable asked. Ruby felt a light, steadying hand on her back. Frank?
I don't remember, she said.
The kettle whistled. The boy policeman looked relieved.
Thank goodness we can make that tea.
Vi rose to do what she did best. Bustle.
Ruby, get the cups and saucers. Where do you keep the sugar these days? That bowl's nearly empty.
Vi moved things about in the cupboard.
Where are your biscuits?
I'm sorry, Ruby said, pulling herself free of Edie's grasp. She was sorry for everything, for not having filled the biscuit tin, sorry for the sugar bowl, for not getting cups and saucers. Sorry she hadn't played that last game of pontoon. She was sorry for Douglas in there, having to go over it. What was he saying? Frank would be alive, if only she hadn't come here. If only... There was a list of things stretching all the way backwards. Things that started, if only I hadn't. Vi opened and shut the fridge. Ruby looked at Vi. Up in the middle of the night in her dressing gown, sniffing the jug of milk.
I'm sorry, she said again.
Never mind, said Vi. We'll manage. Get the cups, constable. That poppet should be in bed.
Edie looked as fragile as a bird perched on the chair.
But first, a cup of sweet tea will see her right, said Vi.
She started clicking her tongue.
Oh, it's awful. Poor Frank. Did I tell you how his mother and I...
Shut up. Ruby said it under her breath, unsure whether it was audible. When she looked up, Vi's lips were set in a hard line. Perhaps Vi had a right to grieve. Still, the woman ought to go home to do it. Ruby watched Vi pour the tea, fragrant until milk clouded it. Frank's presence hadn't gone. The air was full of him. Ruby imagined him appearing, scowling to find Vi sitting there at his kitchen table.
Get rid of that damned old harpy.
Ruby glanced at Edie, who turned her head toward the door, as though she expected to see the handle turn. The constable, teacup at his lips, followed her gaze.
Thank you, Vi, Ruby said. Why don't you go home? That would be all right, wouldn't it, constable?
He gulped, wiped his tea-wet mouth with the back of his hand.
I've got Mrs. Washy Witchy's statement.
Vi's face tightened.
I'll wait, thank you. Senior Constable McCaffrey hasn't spoken to me yet. He knows me. The McCaffreys aren't part of our parish. Roman. Decent people, nevertheless.
Perhaps he'll talk to you at your place later, said Ruby. Vi wasn't listening.
Poor Mrs. Pierce. She'll be seeing her boy in heaven sooner than I'll see mine.
Please, Vi. Ruby struggled not to shout. Put a sock in it, for the love of God. Instead, she said, Do you pray, Vi? Vi bristled.
I'll be praying for poor Frank, even though he hasn't been to church since...
Pray for Douglas too, will you? Ruby said.
The ladies' prayer group will pray for wee Edith.
Vi's eyes were red around the rims.
Tisk, tisk, I wonder what will happen to this place now.
Ruby's mouth opened. She clamped her hand over her mouth in an effort not to scream. If Vi didn't get out, she wouldn't be able to stop herself. Senior Constable McCaffrey filled the doorway.
Thank you, Mrs. Wojciechowski.
He consulted the constable's notebook.
Other than what you think you heard, you didn't see anything, did you?
No, Vi said. But...
Well, that's all we need, Mrs. Wojciechowski. I'll bid you good evening.
He positioned himself, as solid as a block of Cody.
You know where I am,
Vi sniffed as she left. At the click of the latch, Edie trembled, and Ruby kissed the crown of her head. When she looked up, Senior Constable McCaffrey's gaze bored into her.
Mrs. Woods, he said. I gather the three of you and Mr. Woods and the little girl here, rent a couple of rooms in the house. Boarding.
Ruby breathed steadily. She'd heard somewhere that it slowed your pulse. Yes, she managed to say. She ought to have set up the spare room. A stage set for a married couple. She had suggested it, but Douglas hadn't taken her seriously. Now, what if the senior constable had already looked through the house? She wouldn't know if he'd gone up the passage to snoop. He might have seen the room where she and Edie slept. If he looked in Frank's room, he'd see the two men's beds pushed together. She cringed, waiting for awkward questions. Perhaps it was all too late now. Still, tonight the police weren't here for that. Or would they be keeping an eye on Douglas from now on? McCaffrey gave nothing away.
Dr. Bradshaw says you've been looking after Mr. Pierce. he said. Housekeeping, Mr. Woods tells me.
Yes.
He frowned at Edie. Oughtn't the child be in bed?
Edie hid her face against Ruby's chest. She needs me with her.
Ruby stroked Edie's hair.
She needed Edie. She needed to stroke her, keep her with her, not let her go.
McCaffrey cleared his throat. As you like, Mrs. Woods. Your husband says he took the cricket bat to frighten off the intruder. Why did he do that? What was his intention?
Ruby couldn't let herself crumble. Cricket bat? She adopted a vague tone. Did he? They had a game in the afternoon, Douglas and Edie.
I see, said McCaffrey. You married recently.
Yes, Ruby hurried her words. Douglas gets nervy at night. He's as right as rain during the day. At night, any odd sound...
The sentence didn't have to be finished. She knew that shadow behind the policeman's eyes. The war. Yes, he added to his notes.
He pursed his lips, waiting for her.
The lie was like a betrayal. Heart of a lion. She'd made Douglas out to be weak, incapable of rationality. Had Douglas already betrayed her by giving a truer account? Who Lou was, and that it had been all her fault? What would happen if his story differed from hers?
They went out, she said. Her hand continued to follow the shape of Edie's skull. Stroking, stroking.
Because Mr. Woods heard a noise, said McCaffrey.
Yes.
Ruby stopped stroking.
The policeman would notice how her sweating palm had begun to plaster the fine hair. To distract him, she ran her hand over her own hair. I'm sorry, she said with a gasp. Frank.
He nodded, respectful, watching her. The young constable looked up from his notebook.
There was a stillness about Edie. If it weren't for her white knuckles as she clenched on her mother's cardigan, she might have been asleep. But when Ruby peered down at her, Edie's eyes were open, unseeing.
What sort of noise was it you heard?
Said McCaffrey. I didn't hear it.
So Mr. Woods heard the noise, and he took the cricket bat.
Must have. It was on the porch.
Yes, that tallies.
Senior Constable McCaffrey read from his own notes in a dry voice.
There was a scuffle and Mr. Pierce went to your husband's aid. Mr. Woods received an injury from a small mechanical knife used by the attacker. We have the weapon.
The young constable grimly produced something folded in a handkerchief.
Yes, all right, Constable Hill, McCaffrey said. We don't need to see that. Mr. Woods recounted how Mr. Pierce used what he described as a high rugby tackle. He held the intruder back from further attacking Mr. Woods. During the ensuing fray, the intruder got knocked to the ground.
He glanced in Edie's direction and lowered his voice.
Dr. Bradshaw's examination seems to confirm.
He didn't finish the sentence. Ruby hoped she looked astonished enough. It was Frank who saved Douglas.
It seems so.
Senior Constable McCaffrey frowned.
Did the little girl see anything?
Of course not. No, said Ruby. Perhaps she woke up when I rushed in to use the phone.
The lie caught in her chest, and she coughed.
I'm sorry.
Hmm.
McCaffrey squinted at her.
It's very puzzling, Mrs. Woods. I ask myself, why this house? Why does a stranger come to this quiet part of a respectable town, where decent Christian people live? Why did he poke around in this particular shed, in the backyard of this particular house?
All she could do was shake her head. Guilt must be written on her face. She'd have killed Lou if she could have. What was wrong with her? What had robbed her of the power to move? When it came down to it, she'd been weak, and Frank had paid the price.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.